welcome to the Racer X podcast show. I'm your host, Steve Mathis, and I've got a good one for you today. I'm really, really excited. We've got none other than motorcycling legend, motorcycle Jesus, Jean-Michel Bayle on the show. That's right. JMB is on the show. So I've been trying to track him down for a long time, and thanks to Motorvert, thanks to LeBig here in Las Vegas, I managed to get him. He's been around a little bit. He was training Ben Coisey, but as you'll hear, he's decided to pack on up and go back home after Coisey's injury. And, man, I just caught him. He was just leaving. So this is truly, truly an honor for me. I'm glad to have done this. And you'll hear some clicking sounds a little bit. I'm not sure what that is. I tried to get rid of most of them. And you'll also, it's a long story. But let's just say I erased some of the podcast in a fit of panic. And JMB was kind enough to redo some sections. So, I pretty much punched myself in the nuts when I did that. But it was my bad on this end. So no one ever said that I was an expert at these. But I want to thank JMB for being the good soldier and redoing about 10-15 minutes of lost footage. So thanks to JMB. Thanks to you guys for listening to making this thing 20,000-plus listeners, and I really appreciate it. Thanks to, thanks to no sponsors. We don't have a sponsor, but maybe one day. If you want to listen to this one and the other podcasts, they're on iTunes. If you want to listen to some Racer X Canada ones, go to iTunes and search Steve Mathis. There's some good ones on there, but I don't want to hold up the show any longer because, let's face it, whatever I have to say is not as important as what JMB has to say. So I present to you, very happily, gleeful, some might say, none other than the man, the myth, the legend, Jean-Michel Bayle.
This is David Pingree, and you're listening to the Racer X Cat Podcast. What is this? What am I listening to? I'll start over.
JMB, how are you?
Very good. Yeah, it's nice to see you again.
Yes, thanks for doing this. I know I want to thank Motovert and LeBig for getting you on because he's been my connection to you. And so thank you, LeBig. Thank you, Motovert. I appreciate it. You're over here now. You're training Ben Coisey. Coisey has an injury. He's got to leave. Or he's going to be out for five weeks or so, and you're going back home, I guess, tonight from what I understand. So I know you're pressed for time. What did you think of Glen Helen when you showed up? And talk about training Coisey and also talk about Glen Helen.
Coisey, he's a friend of mine. He lives in the same town that I live. Mm-hmm. So he asked me to come over here and to help him a little bit before the outdoor season. And, so I came over here. And, also I like to come over here to see my friend, like Roger DeCoster. And, it's great for me to spend some time in California sometime. So I tried to help Coisey, but actually at the first race he crashed and he hurt himself. So mm-hmm. I think he's going to be out for a little while. And I was at Glen Helen, and it was great to see racing again. You know.
Yeah, yeah. The and you won the USGP there. You've raced there quite a bit, so had to have been quite a sight to see all those semi trucks jammed in there and everything else, and Glen Helen just going off.
Yeah, racing is still very good in here. I saw the race, and the race was great. And of course, a lot of things change. Now it's a fast truck, and you have semi everywhere. But racing is still racing, and the track is still rough, and still a good sport. And the sport is the same, and nothing changed about it. So I was glad to see, racing was still very difficult, and, the track was still very rough, and it was great to see it.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's cool to have you over here. We've got a Frenchman over here actually doing quite well, Christophe Porcel, and he reminds a lot of people of yourself that's seen both of you ride, and myself included. He's a very calculated, tactical kind of rider. And I don't think he necessarily likes being compared to JMB, but I don't know why, but he does remind people of that. Do you see that in him?
Yes. I don't see him so much because he don't like to be compared to me, but because he thinks, it's like a shadow over him. He's doing what he has to do. He come over here to race and to win race, and right now he's doing right. You know, he's working for it, and he's got the Supercross championship in a light class. So, you know, he's doing very good, but, you know, he has to keep working hard and try to keep his way. And the way, you know, yeah, he's not, he don't like, you know, to speak about me, but, you know, because, you know, I think he's trying to do, you know, to avoid, you know, everything around and try to do what he's doing 100%, and that may be the good way to do it also.
Yeah.
But, of course, he's riding like, you know, a little bit like I used to ride. You know, he's
trying to
be smart on a racetrack. He's trying to take some time to think about, you know, the racing during the race. And this is quite good, you know, on a race day. And he's very smooth on a bike, and he's always, you know, thinking and taking good line. And so, yeah, he's riding a little bit like I was riding. That's
yeah.
for sure.
Now, you don't do a whole lot of these interviews. Not a lot of people know what you've been doing, and that's why I'm really excited to have you on this show. You just don't do a lot of interviews, do you?
No, I don't do so much because actually, you know, I live in France, and, you know, I do some stuff for French magazine.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't like so much sometimes come back on, you know, on the past. You know, the past is the past, and I did what I did, and, you know, it was great at this time, but I think, you know, now it's different, and... of course, I like when I can do something where I have time to explain myself and to make people understand who I am. But I don't like to do interview when it's just talking about, you know, racing, you know, 20 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. What have you been doing the last few years? I see you do some rally cars or some things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, actually, I quit. You know, after motocross over here in 93, I raced road race for 8 years.
Yeah.
So maybe more than my motocross career. And, you know, World Championship Road Race was very good for me. And it was 500 at the time. It's the same thing than MotoGP today.
Yep.
And after that, I race endurance race, road race. So it's like the 24 hours, like the 8 hours of
yep.
Suzuka.
Yep.
And I did that for until 2004. And I won two times the 24 hours in Le Mans. And so I won many races also in this class, and it was fun to race. And since 2004, I quit motorcycle, you know, for racing. And I'm racing a little bit rally cars, but, you know, it's just, you know, just for fun, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just having fun to race this kind of car, and it's just nice to do some race again for myself, but I have no expectation to get, you know, in a world championship or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, I'm too old, and, you know, it's not reasonable to think about this.
Now, there were rumors of a comeback for Suzuki, like in 01 or 02. How close did that come to really happening? You were riding, you were testing, but...
Yes, actually, at this time, I was helping Sebastian Tortelli. And I was riding a little bit also for myself, and I was testing also for Suzuki at this time a little bit. And actually, we thought about it because, you know, I was riding pretty good at this time, and I was fast, and we just say maybe it would be a good idea to race outdoors. But you know, I hurt a little bit my knee after, you know, during mm-hmm. Testing. And you know, and we realized, and it was not fun anymore to race. And I realized also then it was not interest, you know, for me, and no fun to race for the top 10 position. You know, I was, you know, my goal was to win races, and you know, we realized then it didn't fit me. You know, so I just say we didn't go for it.
Yeah, I imagine like you're not going to come back and run 10th place. You're going to put 100% effort into it, and you know what I mean?
Yes, yes. You know, that's my way to do things, and you know, then I've always been like that, and I didn't want to put me in a position where I was frustrated with frustration and stuff like that. So
mm-hmm.
I just say no, it's not fun to do anymore.
What I've always wanted to know, and I you've gone on interviews as saying that you wanted to come to America and race the best, but I mean, you won the world title in 88, 125s. You won the 250s in 89. Relatively easy. You would never say that, but I did. And you probably could have won the 500s in 1990 and been the first rider to win all three in consecutive years. And you would have been, you know, lots of money, would have been at home and then all this. But you wanted to come to America. And that just took a lot of drive and balls to me to want to come to America and try your best. And I guess talk about the decision behind that. Did you ever think about staying in Europe, or you were always coming to America?
I was racing in Europe, yeah, of course, you know, world championship, you know, I get world champion in 88 and 1989, but, you know, my dream was really to come over here and race in the States against the best people in the world, and at this time we didn't have any supercross, you know, race in Europe. The only race was Paris, you know, in Bercy.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I was watching is an American rider come in Bercy and lap everyone, you know.
Yeah.
And maybe two laps against a French guy. And I was so embarrassed about that, you know. I'm saying, well, how this can be possible, you know. This is the same bike, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
We are human, you know, all human, and this can be possible. So, I as a kid, I always thought myself, I got to get good at Supercross, and I got to fight against those guys, and I got to come back in Bercy and show them then, you know, French guy can win a race.
Yeah, yeah.
And for this, I was able to do many things, and I was, you know, for me, it was not hard to decide to leave Europe, to come over here, you know, without a family, without anything, you know, losing all my friends. And, you know, it was just, for me, it was just normal. You know, it was just my way. And
yeah.
That's just my goal was to do that. And I just follow my dream and what I want to do. And, you know, it was just normal.
It was just JMB.
Yes.
And in 89, you came over and you raced some early season Supercrosses. And you did all right in those. You won the Gainesville National. From what I hear, you were out of a van. Mitch built you some bikes, some motors, and you were 111 Starbuster on your pants, and that was a big deal because by then the Americans had already, you know, kind of established as being the best riders, and here comes this guy in a van from France whooping up on everybody. Did you think you could win that day? I mean, was it that easy? I guess take me back to that day.
Yeah, you know, I did some Supercross before, but Supercross was quite difficult for me because I was not used to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew in Gainesville, you know, I can play up in front, you know.
Yeah,
I can win the race. And the funniest thing is then at this time, Honda, American Honda, doesn't want to help me a lot at all, you know. So Roger De Coster tried to help me, and he actually find two bikes in a dealer, and we have to board the bike. So Mitch board the bike for me, and he makes the engine, and I bring my suspension back from my practice bike in Europe, and actually we did a very good bike, and I was sure then I would be able to fight for the first position. But of course in Gainesville, you know, winning a race with a without, you know, official team, you know, like as a privateer, you know, was like incredible, you know.
Yeah.
You know, of course the bike was very good, but it was very, very good, big deal, you know.
Yeah, well, you know what a cricket is, right? You know what a cricket sound makes over here? You know, when they rub their wings together and it makes like a cricket sound? That's probably what it was like when you crossed the finish line in Gainesville. Everybody just sitting there wondering what happened.
Yeah, you know. But, you know, for me it was not a surprise. And also for Mitch and also for Roger De Coster, they knew that I was pretty good outdoors. And they knew I can have the race. So, you know, but of course all the rest, you know, for the rest of the world, it was a big surprise.
Yes.
But for me, it was not a surprise.
And then from what I understand is Honda came to you afterwards and said, hey, do you want some help. We'll give you bikes or motors. And you said, no, you didn't help me before, and I will stick with what I had. Mitch told me that story. You said, I'll stick with what I have. Thank you for, you know, Mitch, for helping me. And again, doing it your way, you know, doing it your way.
Yeah, you know, that's the way a little bit I am. You know, I like to be straight with people and pretty fair. And, you know, Mitch, you know, believe in me, and he helped me, you know, when I told him, you know, I'm going to, well, actually, when Roger DeCosta called him and I say, okay, GMB is coming and you have to help him, he just say yes, you know, right away, you know, not thinking about, you know, he's French or he's coming over here, mm-hmm. what he's coming to do. He just say yes, you know, because Mitch is, you know, Mitch likes the sports, you know, he like racing and he liked, you know, the race. He don't care about the rest, you know, and that's good attitude. And so, yeah, when Honda called me and say, yeah, okay, you can ride one of our bike because one rider had some injury. So I say, well, you know, you didn't help me at the beginning. You know, why you are coming now? Because I'm winning race. that's not fair. You know, so I stay with what I have. I'm happy with what I have. And you know, if you want, make a contract ready for next year. That would be a good idea. But, you know, right now, you know, I'm happy with what I have, and I'm going to keep going the way I was doing it.
Yeah. And so 1990, you come over, you win the world title, you come over in 1990, and I didn't realize this, you lost the Supercross title by 7 points, but you missed two races. I don't remember you missing races, but, you know, again, I was just a fan. So you almost won the Supercross title your first year over here full-time. And in the, you had to ride 125 Nationals, which I'm sure wasn't your preferred class. You and you were leading that championship until you broke your arm.
Yes.
In Washougal.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because when I signed my contract with American Honda, at this time they want me to race 125 championship. Of course, for me, it was not so fun, but. You know, it was a good challenge, and actually, I think it was good for me to race with 125 class and in outdoors. And like you say, I missed the championship, you know, but I missed two races also because injury.
Mm-hmm.
And I miss it. And you know, you it's always easy to say after all, yeah, you miss it only 8 points, but you miss it. You know, the end up is the same. So, and the national, I was leading the championship, and I crashed in Washougal. And you know, when you crash, sometimes you get hurt, and sometimes not. And this time I get hurt, and I was not able to. I missed like five races. I think I have a needle operation back in France. So, yeah, I was not happy with that, but, you know, I was doing my job. I was leading the championship, and, you know, I crash and I get up. So that's the way it is.
So I guess you came back and you wanted to complete the series, and Honda asked you to pull over for Mike Krudowski. And when you refused to do that, you wanted to race for the title or race for race wins. They actually benched you at one time. Do you want to talk about that?
Oh yeah, no problem. You know, I have no problem to talk about this this thing. You know.
Yeah. So.
Actually, because you know, I was racing 125 championship, and my teammate Mike Kiedrowski was fighting with me for the championship, and also Guy Cooper from Suzuki was fighting, and we were, you know, the three guys, and we were racing for the title.
Right.
And you know, the Honda position and the team manager position was always, you know, we have to fight for our position, and we is like nothing, you know, have to come on, you know, as a team race until the last race. So that's the way we were racing, and actually I was quite happy with it because it's pretty fair, you know. Everybody is trying to win races, and you know, my teammate also, and I was, you know, doing it, you know. I was very happy with the situation. And after I was leading the championship, I get hurt, so I missed a couple races. And when I was ready, I came back. And Honda asked me, okay, what you going to do? I said, well, I'm going back. And, you know, I know the championship is finished for me, but, you know, I'm going to go out there and try to win the race. And like I did before, to try to show people then... I am not the champion, but you know, I win many races, and you know, and that's my job, and I'm gonna do it, you know, all the way. And they say, oh no, you have to, you know, you have to help Mike, and you have to let it go, and I go, oh, come on, you told me at the beginning of the year that this was only for the last race, and you never told me that it was, you know, three races or four races before the end.
Right.
So. And they say, yeah, but that's the way it is now. And so I say, okay. So they say, what you gonna do? I say, I'm gonna do. If I'm racing, for my position. And if I can win the race, I will win the race. And so they say, okay, we cannot let you do that. So I say, come on, you know, that's the way. I told you that I'm gonna do it, and I'm, you know, very straight, and
yeah.
You know, because at this time I can say, you know, okay, I'm not doing it, and after doing the race, do something different. But that's not the way I am.
Yeah, yours.
So I just told him that, and they just say, okay, we put your bike in a track. So I say, yeah, okay, if you want, you know, that's your
all right.
Responsibility. You are the boss, and, you know, I'm a rider, so if I go on a racetrack, it's to win a race, and you have the boss of the team, so if you want to put my bike in a track and me not racing, I will not race, but you take your decision, and I take mine, and, you know, actually, Dave Arnold put my bike back in a track, and I didn't race for the last race, for the couple of last race.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, yeah, that would have been pretty tense around the Honda truck, I guess, you know?
Yeah, actually, you know, it was pretty tense, but, you know, it was the way it was, and, you know, mm-hmm. I'm a very straight person, and he asked me, you know, what was my plan, and, you know, my plan was to race and to win a race, and, you know, and at this time, Dave Arnold takes the choice to do that, and, you know, for me, it was no big deal, you know. I am only rider. I am not the boss, so
yeah, yeah.
You know, he did that, and you know, for me, it was no big deal, you know. It was, you know, it was his choice.
Mm-hmm. Hey, did you have a favorite outdoor national track?
Actually, I like Steel City.
Steel City, really?
Yeah, not because it's Dave Kuhn, you know, place.
yeah. This is the Racer X podcast show.
Yeah, you know, not because of that. It's just because that's the first outdoor track that I raced in a state. You know, back
yep.
in 87. You know, Grand Prix.
Yeah, actually, the 87 Grand Prix.
World Championship
right.
was there.
Yeah, Kehoe won. I think Eric Kehoe won.
So you know, it's and also I won many races in a 500 class there.
Yep.
And I like this track, you know.
Wow. You might be the only guy that would ever say that. I mean, it's
Why?
A good track. Well, lots of people say Redbud, Millville, Washougal, you know, but...
Yeah, of course. But, you know, it's just, you know, I like, you know, of course the track is, you know, it's not, you know, maybe the best dirt in a
mm-hmm.
in the world, but... You know, that's the atmosphere there, you know, and also always when I went there, I always remember good memories. So, you know, for me, it's I like this track.
So going 1990, you almost won the Supercross title. You almost won the 125 title. Did you do anything different going into 1991 season? Did you train differently? Did you do anything different? Because 1991,
yeah.
You were dominant. You know, you were just a dominant rider.
Yes, of course, you know, I realized and I need to get stronger and
mm-hmm.
to get better and to, so I work harder for sure for 91 season than 1990 and, you know, I try to improve myself, I try to improve my bike and I try to test more and yeah, of course, you know, I work
mm-hmm.
harder than before.
Yeah, no, definitely. In 1990, you
mm-hmm.
came over full-time Honda American Honda race team. You had to ride the 125 Nationals, though. Were you pretty disappointed with that? Apparently you were.
Yes, of course, because, you know, I was leading the championship with a big fight with Guy Cooper at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, 125 was not, you know, was not what I want to do it, but you know, in my contract, I signed for 125 championship and 250 Supercross. So, you know, my goal was to win the championship, and I have a bad crash. And you know, when you crash, you know, sometimes you you know, you get hurt, and sometimes you go again and you race again, and this time I get hurt and I have to I broke my arm and I have to get an operation back in France. So you know, for me, I was disappointed to not winning the championship, but you know, that's racing, and that's the way it is, you know. And of course, you know, if you don't crash, you don't get hurt. But you know, sometimes you crash and you get hurt, and that's the way it is.
I think, and you know, you can just look at your career. You're the type of person that you make a decision and you stand by it. You know, you turned down the factory Honda after you won. You wanted to come to America. I mean, I don't want to say use the word stubborn. You just believe in what you believe. And you stand by it, you know?
Yeah, you know, that's my way to do it. You know, when I make a decision, or when I'm thinking about something, or when I think something, I just, you know, very confident with what I think and what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't like to change my mind because the one last guy speak about something.
Right.
And, you know, when I have something in my mind, I keep to it, and I work hard, and I try to follow my line. And that's my way of doing, you know, think, and that's my way of life.
J&B, I've got a special guest that wanted to come on the show. I thought it would be a cool deal, and it's none other than Jeff Stanton. Jeff, what's up?
Not much. Just hanging out in Michigan. It's raining today, so just getting some jobs done around the farm.
Okay, now you guys, you don't want to fight each other anymore or nothing.
Not at all. I'm too old and out of shape to do any fighting, let alone do any racing.
Okay. JMB, how bad did it get between you guys?
First, you know, I want to say then, you know, it's nice to speak to Jeff again. You know, it's just great to speak to him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we always fight, but you know, when you are racing, you just want to fight, you know, and you are not there to get friend with everybody. And you know, with Jeff, we have we have a good fight, but you know, that's racing. And actually, today I'm happy to I'm very proud to fight with him and to race with him. And even the race I lost, you know, for me was a great remember, you know, because you know, when you fight against somebody who are good like Jeff, you know, you're always trying to get better and better and try to go faster and faster, and you know, that's why we are racing and that's why we are doing that. And you know, was always easy, you know, it would be no fun. So you know, I want to thank him again to race like he raced, and he did a great career and he did a great job, and you know, it was nice to be with him.
Yeah. Now, Jeff, you've told me before that, you know, you worked super hard at it and you trained a lot, and nothing came easy to you as far as than having the talent on a motorcycle. And you would watch JMB eat Kit Kats and drink Pepsi, and it would frustrate you. What did you learn from JMB all those years?
You know, after you sit back and your career's gone by and you sit back and look at it, you go, you know what, maybe I should have took a different approach on some things. You know, like you said, I had the work ethic and did all the training and all the riding, and there's no doubt that shortened my career by a few years. But, you know, that's what I had to do at the time, and, you know, JMB did what he had to do. He was super talented on a bike, could do more than anybody on a bike, you know, talent-wise was just outstanding. And you know, you sit back now and look at it and go, man, I wish I would have went and played with him on the hillside at Simi Valley a little more instead of going out and, you know, just putting in laps after laps after laps. But, I have so many great memories of racing and the way it all played out, from my experiences to other people's experiences. So it was a great career for both of us.
JMB.
Yes?
I mean, obviously you couldn't have gone as fast as you did without working at it. Pretty hard. Did you try to make Jeff think that you didn't work at it?
Yes, also that was a game, because, you know, I knew then I cannot train as much as him because he was, you know, working so hard. And, you know, we were in the same team, so I knew what he was doing. So I knew on this side I cannot beat him. So, you know, I have to do a different way, and, you know, my way was to try to be more better on a racetrack and try to make him feel that I am doing it very easy, you know. But it was quite difficult for me also, and I was I was practicing also a lot. I was doing moto also, but you know, I was trying to try to make him believe that for me it was very easy, but it was not.
Yeah.
No, it's never easy. That's for sure.
Now, did you guys ever have heated words? Did it ever get to the point where you told each other to F off?
I don't believe we ever got vocal with each other. You know, I think, you know, when we were racing, we were focused on our racing, and you know, if he beat me, I was mad at him, and if I beat him, he was probably mad at me. So, you know, as far as, you know, cussing each other out, we never went toe to toe with each other.
JMB, what's your best Stanton story?
I have many, you know. I have many, but you know what I, you know, sometime I was, you know, trying to, always trying to show him that, you know, for me it was easy, but sometimes it was, you know, like, especially in outdoors, because it was very hot, you know, in outdoors, and mm-hmm. very difficult for me. And, you know, always think, you know, he's going to, you know, I always thought he's going to, you know, he's not going to, you know, he's going to get tired during the race, but he was never getting tired. And, you know, that was unbelievable. And sometimes I was leading and he was coming back, and I said, wow, he's going to get tired one time, and, you know, it never happened, you know. So I always have to fight against myself and try to keep, you know, going fast and try to keep him, you know, a little bit far away from me, because I knew he was, you know, very good racing close to people. And, you know, it was just, you know, fun to race against Jeff, for sure.
Jeff, what did you learn from JMB?
You know, I learned a lot. He had great skills on a bike, you know. Between him and Jeremy, you know, they came in and raised the bar on, you know, how to go out and apply themselves on a supercross track as far as, you know, the skills on their bike. There was always something that you could watch JMB do, and you knew that you had to adapt it to your racing, or you were going to get left in the dust. And so, you know, I would watch him, you know, on video and watch him racing, and just he had great speed through the whoops, great corner technique, many great skills. You know, you don't win any races and championships without being, you know, super talented all the way around.
Yeah, no, I think that's kind of what people think of when they think of JMB. They think of just super, super talented. And Jeff, now you know, Jeff, that he was working harder than what he let on.
Well, you know, you don't, like I just said, you don't win races, championships without putting in effort. You know, luck and playing around will only get you so far. So, you know, he won many a races and many a championships here. And so you get that by working hard as well. There's no doubt.
Early on, when JMB came over, did you guys hang out? JMB, did you guys try to be friends and it just didn't work out, or?
No, actually, you know, when we were going, you know, overseas, like in Japan for testing, you know, we spent some time together and we have a lot of fun. But you know, when I was over here, and you know, Jeff was living in Michigan and I was in California, and I was, you know, I was training and I was doing everything I can to try to win races. And you know, for us, we never tried to get friends. We just tried to do our job. You know, our job was to win races, and we were just 100% is what we want to do. And so, you know, actually we never tried to get friends, but you know, was, you know, I always say hello to Jeff, you know, and mm-hmm. For me it was always, you know, normal.
Jeff, what about your guys' bike setup? Was it pretty different, I imagine? Do you know?
Oh, yeah. Bike setup was much different. I mean, I think JMB could back this up. I think JMB kind of had his bike and it was set in stone. You know, he didn't like to venture off of it that much. You know, he did some testing, but it seemed like I was the test monkey. I was always testing and trying different things and trying to make my bike, you know, better and improve the race team. And JMB, he had his setting and he liked it and he was used to it and, you know, didn't want to venture that far off of that. So yeah, our bikes were much different.
Do you agree with that, JMB? Your bike stayed the same?
Yeah, sometimes change, you know, but very little change. Actually, I was testing a lot, but never changed so much thing on my bike. I was very happy with it. And and yes, Jeff was always trying new stuff and try to get something, you know, that will fit better his riding style. And you know, I was I was quite happy with my bike, and I was trying just to improve a little, but for me it was difficult to find something better than what I have.
Yeah. JMB, when you were carving your initials in the side of the hill at Simi Valley Honda Track, what exactly went through your mind? Were you doing it to piss Jeff off?
No, not at all. You know, this place, you know, for me, it's like a church, you know.
Yeah.
It's, you know, because I saw on TV, you know, and everything, I saw on TV David Bailey right over there. And for me, it was a dream to practice there, you know, when I was a kid. And I always say, okay, one day I'm gonna put GMB on this hill. And you know, for me it was like, now I'm practicing there. I'm there every day, and I can do it. So you know, I just do it for the fun.
And Jeff, you told me you were sitting there going, "What is he doing? Why is he doing?"
Yeah,
that?
You know, we're sitting there watching, going, "What the heck?" You know, it took after many minutes. And you start seeing it all get laid out, and you're going, holy cow, that's cool. I wish I would have thought of that.
Who knew after all these times? You know, as a mechanic, I know that your two mechanics didn't get along either, which was funny because I think maybe they didn't get along worse than you guys.
I think you're probably right there. They butted heads. You know, I had Dan, and Dan still is the stubborn old grump, and Dan did me an awesome job, and I got no complaints. I really love Dan, but between Cliff being the quiet type and he's a little bit shy. You know, if you first go up to him, you wouldn't think he was super talkative. You know, which he is, but you know, they kind of butted heads all along the way.
Yeah, and JMB, were you aware of your mechanics? The mechanics not liking each other?
But Cliff, Cliff is very, you know, he's never talking to anybody, you know, he's doing things his way. And even to me, sometimes he spent, you know, like 5 hours without talking anything, you know. So sometimes I was like, I did something wrong. That was the way Cliff was doing it. And, you know, actually my bike was always perfect, so I have nothing to say against him. And, I realize now that everybody is different, you know, and we just have to do what we like to do. And that was the way it was Cliff. And Dan was, Dan was doing, you know, his job, and he was trying to make Jeff win a race. And, you know, that was great, you know, and after, you know, the rest is very, you know, it's not important.
Now, between you two and Bradshaw, there was just some epic battles in those early 90s. I guess, did you guys have any Bradshaw memories? I mean, is there anything that comes to mind? Jeff, you have a ton, I know that, but James.
Yeah, you know, I raced with Damon for so long, and, you know, when I was an amateur, he was a young amateur coming up, and we were good buddies, and then when he got into the professional scene, we had so many just awesome battles. I have nothing but great things to say about Damon. Damon and I could battle each other and just, you know, put on an awesome show. I wished he would have stayed around a little longer because we could have continued to have more battles. So I got nothing but great things to say about Damon. Him and I just had some awesome, awesome races.
JMB, who would you want to win worse, Bradshaw or Jeff?
Jeff, for sure. No, I don't like Damon. I don't like him, you know, because he was racing. You know, on the racetrack, he was racing like everybody, maybe harder than everybody, but this was not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he never liked me, and because I was French than anything. And, you know, Jeff never had this position. You know, Jeff was fighting against me because I was, you know, a racer. And, for sure I speak a different language, but I was racing like those guys to try to win the race. And, you know, Damon always, you know, talked me about, you know, always saying then, I am French and this and this. And, you know, I never liked him for this. So, you know, for me, of course, he is a great rider. He was a great rider, and it was good to race against him. But outside racing, I think I don't like him, because his position and his way to see racing was not my way. And that's why I don't like him.
Hey, Jeff, in 1991, obviously, Bale, that was JMB's magical year. How frustrating was it for you?
No, it was frustrating for me because, you know, I had won the year before.
Yeah.
And I knew it wasn't going to be easy.
Right.
So, and then he just come out and kicked everybody's butt that year. And, you know, you try harder, you want to do better, you try harder and try harder, but sometimes it just doesn't work. The harder you try, the worse it gets, you know. So it was great for me, because then I had to step up my game the following year. So it's always good to have somebody come in and kick your butt and kind of set the tone, because, you know, it raises your level.
Right. J&B, in 92, they switched to a brand new frame and bike and everything. You had a little bit of difficulties with it, gather from reading some interviews about it. What was so different about the bike?
Well, it was completely new bike. You know, every 3 or 4 years, Honda changed completely the bike at this time. So it was completely new bike, and Jeff and me have some problem to get used to it, and especially at the beginning of the season. And I didn't like the bike at the beginning, and I start to like it after, you know, maybe 5 or 6 races, and when we start to win some races with Jeff. And, you know, and after we, you know, I fight for the championship after that. And, you know, when you are fighting, sometimes he's doing good and sometimes he's doing not so good. And Jeff was riding he was very fast with his bike, and, you know, he was faster than me many times. And I win some races, but he's got the championship.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, give us your best J&B story. Just the one maybe that got you the maddest, or the one that made you most shake your head in amazement, or anything like that.
Well, you know, it's just there was many a Supercross races where at the end of practice you go, man, I'm feeling super good. End of the heat race, you know, I may have won a heat race. He went a heat race, and I'd always say to myself, man, I got him handled today. I got him handled. And then go out for the main event. You start third or fourth. By the time you get into second, shoot, he's 15 seconds ahead of you. Actually, my son and I was just watching some old races just this last week that this buddy of mine, Steve Mathis, gave me a whole set of vintage races. We were watching some of them, and that's the way it was. By the time I got into second or third, J&B was gone. He was checked out. If he got a start, man, he was tough to beat. If he was on his game and you were on your game, and if he was in front of you, no way, gone.
So your memories are frustration.
No, they're all good. I got no complaints. It was great to have J&B as a competitor, because it kept you on your toes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, everybody thought that it was all, you know, hatred the whole time, but not. It really wasn't that. You know, we had heated battles, and you know, we let our battles stay on the track, and you know, never took it towards each other. And you know, like JMB said, I enjoy seeing him when I see him, and you know, I consider him a friend.
Well, great, that's good. JMB, same thoughts.
Yeah, yes, exactly same. You know, and Jeff always have a good attitude, you know, outside the track. And of course, we fight a lot on the racetrack, but this is, you know, this is racing. Is
yep.
That's why we are doing it, you know, because we love that. But you know, outside the track, Jeff was, you know, was very good attitude, and he's a good guy, and no problem to be friends with him.
Mm-hmm. Well, hey Jeff, thanks for coming on.
No problem.
I appreciate
That's
it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, J&B, are you going to come back and do any racing in the States?
No, actually, I don't race anymore, you know. I just, I quit road race 2 years ago. So now, you know, I'm just in California just for fun, you know. And I'm going back tonight.
They're trying to get me to do a celebrity two-stroke race, and they're thinking that you're going to come back and do it too. And I was kind of hoping that wasn't the case, because, dude, I'm fat and out of shape. Now I'd have to start training again.
Okay, no. What we can do is we can try to ride together at home if you want. You know, I can come to your home and we spend
there
one
you
ride.
Go.
It would be more fun, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Awesome.
Because we can do only three lap race, you know, that's enough for
Awesome. Well, it's good to talk to you, and hope all is well, buddy.
Okay, bye, Jeff.
Thanks,
Jeff.
See you, Mathis.
J&B,
yes?
Do you think that, I mean, you talked about how you wanted to give the impression you didn't work that hard, but I mean, you were working hard behind the scenes, weren't you?
Yes. But like I say, you know, I knew Jeff was working very, very hard, and I knew he was very strong. So I knew then I cannot fight against him, you know, this way. So I have to make him think, you know, then I was very, very superior, you know, on a racetrack,
yeah.
Because I was very talented and I have a lot of luck, and that was my the only chance I have to make him, you know, to change his mind, you know,
to
say, oh, GMB is very good. And so, you know, I was, you know, always trying, you know, at Honda because we were in the same team, so he knew everything I was doing. So I was always trying to show him that I was not practicing and that I was, you know, not so strong. But on the bike side, I was, you know, doing moto and walk a lot and, you know, do bicycle and running and testing a lot and trying to improve my bike. But, of course, in front of him, I was always trying to drink Coke and to eat Kit Kat, you know.
Yeah, that's what he said.
that was my game, you know, to try to make him think, okay, oh, this guy is very good.
sneaky Frenchman.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, I get the impression that your relationship with the media wasn't that good. They didn't always portray you in the best way. And, I mean, I was a guy just reading the magazines. There was no internet around. Do you feel like you got maybe a bit of a raw deal from the media, U.S. media?
Well, I think they tried to make it, you know, to make a story about my my racing here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, try to make, you know, like a French guy coming to America you know, it's like always try to make a story about a French guy who's going to come here and take the championship against an American guy. And, you know, I never liked this. You know, like I say, I came over here to race and to fight the best rider in the world. And, you know, America is, you know, everybody said, and it's a free country. So I was so happy to race over here. But, you know, some people try to make a war between France, you know, French and American, and it was not the case. You know, I was just a racer, and I went to race, and I think now everything changed. You know, now it's very different.
Yeah, for
you
sure.
Have many forward rider coming, you know, like or many French, and also you have Chad Reed, who are Australian, and you know, now I think changed. But I was the first one, you know, to get over here and
mm-hmm.
And I was French, so I think it was more difficult for me at this time.
Yeah, because I definitely, you know, Motocross Action ran that one photo of everybody standing for the anthem, and you had your helmet on, and they made a remark about it. You know what I mean? It just seemed like they went
if you look at it, you know, I have a sticker on my helmet at this time, and I support, you know, the American troop in Iraq. And, you know, my grandfather did the war, you know, in France.
Yeah.
And he fight against the German, you know, with mm-hmm. American people. And, you know, I'm very, very, you know, I'm very, very proud about, you know, the American country.
Yeah.
And, you know, I care about it. And, you know, I know they save us, you know, in a World War II. And, you know, if they came to France and they lost a lot of people for us, and, you know, my grandfather did the war, and, you know, and so I have a lot of respect for American country. And, you know, I think at this picture, I think I put my helmet off maybe like 5 seconds after the picture. You know, it was just, you know, something, well, I didn't care at this time because I was here to race.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was not so nice, I think.
I know, I agree. And I'm a Canadian, too, so I'm a little bit of a foreigner living in a strange land also. But 1992 comes around. You're the defending champion in all three classes.
Mm-hmm.
And by all accounts, you didn't like the bike like we were talking about that much.
Mm-hmm.
You were into road racing already at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Looking back on it, did you give 1992 your full effort?
You know what? When I am racing, I'm always racing, and you know I don't want to say that I didn't give 100% because Jeff won the championship, and he deserved it, you know, because he ride very good, and you know I was not able to adapt to the bike as fast as he get adapt to it, and. Of course, I was already, you know, in road race. I was trying to make my contract ready for 93, and I raced the French Grand Prix in France the day, you know, I left the day after the last race in the Coliseum, the last Supercross. So, of course, you know, I was into it, but this is, you know, it cannot be an excuse. You know, when you are racing, you are racing, and you try your best, and. I was not as fast as 91 for sure, and I make some mistake also because I was leading the championship two races before the end, and I make a mistake. I crash in San Jose, mm-hmm. and that's the story. But Jeff won the championship this year.
But it's fair to say your mind wasn't 100%. Let's say it's fair to say that.
It was not 100%, but that's not the reason. You know, it's just you have to be 100%, and that was a mistake from my side.
Did you get a ton of money from Tai Chi Gear to switch over from JT? I always wondered that.
Sorry?
Did you get like a ton of money to switch to Tai Chi Gear in
1992? No, actually not so much. You know, no. It was just because JT was slowing down mm-hmm. in the motocross, and Tai Chi was trying to get motocross clothes in Japan and in Europe also, but I didn't make more money than with JT.
Oh, okay, all right.
Just because it was just a move. I knew GT was still making the clothes for Tai Chi, so for me it was working with the same people, and GT was not able to keep going the way they were doing it, and, the only way to stay with the same people was to write for Tai Chi, so that's what I did.
Rumor has it, and this comes from a guy named Rupert, but rumor has it, you were the first guy to really skim the whoops. Do you agree with that? A lot of guys were jumping through them at those back then, and you were the first guy to get on top.
Yes. At this time, everybody was trying to get, good timing in the whoops, mm-hmm. Go 3x3 or 4x4 or something like that. And I tried to test, the bike on trying to get, on the top of the whoops and try to improve the bike. To go the whoop this way, and actually we were able to do it many times. I think at Simi Valley at the test track I was the only one to go on the top of it very easy. So at this time we realized then that was the way to win races was the whoops. And at the beginning I was the only one to do it. So when it was a lot of whoops, everybody say, okay, GMB is going to win the race because it's a lot of whoops. And so. Yeah, it was good. It's good to always improve, your sport and try to bring some new stuff and try to improve yourself also. And that was one big step for us.
Yeah, and would you go in them in fourth like the guys are doing now? Would you switch?
Yeah. I think the first one also to put gear in the whoops,
Right.
And I was going in sometimes second gear and put fourth or fifth sometime. And because the two-stroke at this time don't have so much torque, mm-hmm. so we have to use up gearing to improve the speed.
Yeah, to work on you make the motorcycle work for you.
Yeah.
What got you into road racing? That was bizarre. What made you get excited about road racing?
Well, I understand then for you it's a little bit bizarre because in a state you don't have so much road racing culture,
mm-hmm. Right.
And everybody have a off-road bike here, and it's very different than in Europe. But for us in Europe, road race is a lot more important than motocross. Motocross is like the underground categories,
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it was always a dream to race in road race. Always a dream to be able to race this kind of bike. And when I have the chance to do it, I just didn't let it go. I say, okay, I'm gonna try. And I race 8 years in Grand Prix racing, in World Grand Prix racing,
yep.
Maybe more than motocross, maybe. And It was just fun for me. It was just great, because fighting for the... I never won a race, but, fighting for pole position, I got 2 pole position
yep.
in 500 with Mick Doohan. And, for me, it was, unbelievable to be able to race this kind of bike and to get some, top 5 position.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big dream for me. And, feeling inside was the same as come over here and to win a championship. It was like, wow, I'm able to do it, and that's great.
I know, you made all the motocrossers proud because we would say, look how good our top motocrosser is. He can get top 5 in a MotoGP race,
Yeah, because, at the beginning it was the same than when I came over here, At the beginning in road race world, I was, wow, this guy is racing motocross. What he's doing here and all this kind of stuff, But you know, the only guy who say, you know, was happy, you know, it was Mick Doohan. And when he saw me coming, he just told me, he say, hey, man, you know, happy you are here, and I hope you're going to make it, and I hope we can fight together. And because, he knew that motocross was very difficult also. And of course, road race is difficult, but it's just different, you know. But it's still racing, and we are here to race, and it's just fun to race. So, you know, for me, it was great to race in a world championship road race.
Man, you were one driven guy. You know what I mean? You were one motivated rider person in life.
I like to have challenge. You know.
Yeah.
I like to give 100% than what I'm doing, and that's the way I see stuff, you know, and you know, it's just the way I see it, and that's the way I'm doing it, and that's make me happy, you know. That's all.
Who was your closest friend among the other motocross guys when you were over here? Did you have somebody?
Actually, I never got so much with. I rode a couple time with Johnny O'Mara.
Johnny O, yeah.
Yeah, because he was. You know, a good guy, you know, he was riding very good, and he was always playing with a bike and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. I ride a couple times with him, but that's the only guy who I practiced.
Do you have any regrets about leaving motocross early?
No, I have no regrets.
No regrets?
It's not a regret. The only regret is maybe you know, I never paid too much attention to the media, to the press stuff.
Okay, yeah.
And
yeah.
So people did, not all the people see the good face about me, you know.
Right.
And that's my only regret, is not to explain to people exactly my feeling, you know.
Yeah.
I was more, when something was going on, I was just trying to avoid it and to forget about it, because I was racing was more important for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I should take, you know, a little bit more time to explain to the press and to people what was my goal and what was my feeling to the American people. And you know, I should take time to that, and you know, that's the only regrets I have.
You actually did ride under an AMA license though for a little while, right?
So, yes, because at the time I was, you know, French outside people cannot race in a state without AMA licenses. So I won the world championship in '89.
Yep.
With AMA licenses, and I won for the championship for American country and not France.
Wow! Yeah. So
because when I was going on a podium, you know, the American anthem was there and the flag also, and but that was the only way for me to race some race in the state in '89.
Wow! Yeah, I don't think many people know that, you know. So
But you can see, you can check some picture of podium. Like I have a podium in Belgium,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I won the race, and the American flag is behind, and the American anthem is on, and you know, that's very strange, but that's the way it was.
No, definitely. And you talked about in the beginning about your Paris-Bercy goal. You did that. You won Bercy. You were the man. So that had to have been a childhood dream.
Yeah, this was a big dream, you know, because of course racing over here was unbelievable, but you know, racing back in France, you know, in front of all the French guy and show them, then, you know, I was able to win races and to win Bercy, and was great. And you know, at this time, Bercy was, you know, all the best rider was there, you know. So, you know, when, you know, winning the race over there was quite difficult, because it was very small track and very, you need to have a good start, and, you know, it was difficult to race. But there, but, you know, for me, it was, you know, it was the best moment, you know, of the year, is to race Bercy.
I've been there a couple of times when Villemin won, beating McGrath.
Mm-hmm.
And the place was unbelievable loud and crazy. I can imagine being the first Frenchman to win.
Yeah,
how it must have been.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Every time I was going in, you know the place, you know, we go out.
The tunnels.
And we came back in the stadium in, and every time I was going in, everybody stand up, you know, it was like, it was it was crazy, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
But, you know, it's great. That's why I was racing, you know, and practicing hard and training hard just for this. So it was great to feel it and to experience it.
And what was your reaction to One Industries coming out with a helmet in your honor?
Oh, that was great. You know,
yeah.
we talk about it sometime, you know, just for fun with Marc Blanchard, and we say many times, okay, maybe one day we're going to do a helmet, and they did it, and, you know, I was quite, you know, very happy, and it's just a great, you know, sure, I have the real one at home.
Yeah.
That's better. But, you know, this one is just, it's just today, you know, and it's fun to
do
see
it.
And I also, when I saw, I think, Dungey, won his first Supercross with it, you know, I was quite happy.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool how they did the Sheen one and you, and, you know, it's great. So,
yeah.
Well, hey, thanks thanks for doing this, J&B. You've been a long-time guest that I've always wanted to get on the show and always wanted to talk to, and I finally made it happen thanks to Motovert and thanks to LeBig. So, and thanks to you mostly. Thank you for being on the show.
No, that was good for me because, you know, I can, you know, speak to you, and, you know, now, you know, racing is done, it's more easy to speak to people and to explain my feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just want to thank all the American motocross fan, and, you know, sorry for my English, but, you know, I live in France now for many years, so when I come back in the States, it's always difficult for me to speak English again. But, you know, I'm trying, and
I think you're good.
Hope you have fun, you know, listen to the story, and I have a lot of fun to speak to Jeff Stanton, and it was great to speak to him on the phone, and, you know, I want to thank you all I want to thank also David Combe for all the help he gave me when I was over here. And that was great to speak to you guys. Thank you.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you very much, J&B, and hopefully we'll see you soon sometime in America.
Yeah, okay. See you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.